Committee on General Government back to order. We are going to open a work session on House Bill 3609. And let's see, Patrick, if you would remind us from this morning, did we have amendments on this bill?
Mr. Chair, this bill does not have amendments.
Okay.
We had a discussion on the bill this morning.
Right.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Mabry.
I would move the bill to the floor with a new pass recommendation.
Thank you. Does it have a subsequent? Yeah, I think what we wanted. Yeah, let's do that. Okay. Representative Mabry moves House Bill 3609 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Representative Miller.
I have a question over here.
So which microphone? We're removing you.
No, they both work, so it doesn't matter. You could have stereo that way, Representative.
I want to say that I'm extremely disappointed that we would pass this bill, would even move this bill, and discriminate in any form against our veterans. And I feel that we had enough of that with Vietnam. We don't need it now. We should be all inclusive in our state. I think for us to do something for three counties, three wealthy counties, three prototypes without making this all inclusive for all our veterans is a disgrace and injustice and very wrong. And I think it should be defeated and tabled and amendments made.
Okay, thank you. Representative Mabry.
I would just say I can sympathize with what Representative Nelson is discussing. I do think it would be great to have this be statewide. However, I don't think it's been demonstrated that there's money enough to do that at this point statewide until we prove that there's savings to be made. And that's what demonstration project is about, is demonstrate the viability of it, and I think if we authorize this, we can come back next year and say, look, we've been a success and extended deadline. But right now, anything that's going to have much of a fiscal impact is not going to have a chance of passing. So while I appreciate where Representative Nelson's coming from and respect her more than words can say, I think this bill needs to move forward.
Thank you. Any other discussion? I'm not going to allow the banter to go back and forth. If you have a comment to make, make the comment, and then we're going to move on. I'm not going to allow banter going back and forth. Do you understand?
Mr. Chair, I didn't have any banter, and I don't know why you've said that to me, and I don't deserve it. So I want to speak to the bill, and I'm going to ask a question, and I think I have that right.
We're going to stand at the end.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering if this bill has a further referral to Ways and Means whereby should funding be found available that it could be turned into an all-inclusive program without having to be rewritten?
I think that it does not have a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. I think that the bill can, certainly on the Senate side, if the Senate felt that there was a fiscal impact with this bill, they certainly could send it to Ways and Means on that side as well. And they could have both the Substantive Committee look at it as well as the Ways and Means Committee. I think that one of the things that, as we're looking at this, is that, and I, what the sponsors are trying to establish, I think, is the fact that there is, Washington County has shown, sort of on their own, through their own process that there was a savings, that they were able to realize a savings to DHS. And I think what the sponsors of this bill are trying to do is set up a larger group, so to speak, that will validate Washington County's findings. And then if that proves that there is a savings to the Department of Human Services, go ahead and roll it out statewide. So in the meantime, I would say that there's nothing that keeps a county from being able to have a service officer help veterans that are in their area. So does that answer your question?
That answers my question. Thank you.
Okay, you're welcome. Any other discussion? Seeing none, Gina, call the roll, please. Excuse.
Aye.
Aye.
No, never.
Aye.
Yes.
Aye. House Bill 3609, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed to the floor. The due pass recommendation. Representative Gallegos, you want to carry it? That would be fine. Representative Farr and Representative Gallegos will be the carriers of this bill on the floor. Thank you. I'm going to close the work session on 3609. I'm going to open a work session on 3380. I don't have another. Oh, wait. Whoop. Lift that. Forget I said that. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2739 because I have Representative Gilman here. Representative Gilman, you want to come forward, please? Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Mr. Chair. We have two sets of amendments for this bill. One is the one you instructed us to work out, and I'm perfectly happy with these this amendment. I'm hearing now that there might be a little problem with it.
Dash one.
Two separate issues going on here. Dash one was just to make it so lands would be happy with the shall, and now I'm hearing there might be a little bit of a problem with words. I encourage you to go ahead and send it over to the Senate, and if there is an issue, we're only talking about a word or two here. It may be that public interest is not defined or something like that. So that's the dash one. And that deals with the bill as I originally crafted it.
Okay.
The dash two amendments have something else altogether involved. But because of the relating clause, it fits. In Southern Oregon, in White City, we have the Department of Transportation and the Jackson County maintenance shops right next to each other. As a matter of fact, they're co-located. These amendments in the Dash 2 would allow Department of Transportation to do a similar thing in other parts of the state without having to go back through quite so many hoops, and that's the reason for the Dash 2. So it's a different concept, but I do think it's good for government efficiency, and I have not heard any, no one's come to me and said they oppose the Dash 2s.
Okay. And you're not opposed to the Dash 2s being put into the bill, and it would be put in as an addition to the, so what you would be looking for us to do is adopt the Dash 1s and the Dash 2s and then the bill, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Okay. Are there any questions for Representative Gilman?
I thought someone else was getting ready to come up.
Oh, okay.
If there's any.
Representative Kitts?
Are there more to testify on that?
Well, I don't know. Doug, did you want to say anything about it?
Not unless you have any questions.
Why don't you go ahead and come on up and just identify for the record who you are. And then that way, if Representative Kitts or Representative Przanski Representative Kitts, do you have any questions?
I do not have a question.
Okay. Representative Brzezinski, did you have a question?
Yeah, I just, you're with, hold on.
Chair Cromwell, members of the committee, good afternoon. Doug Tindall, state maintenance engineer with the Oregon Department of Transportation. This is an amendment that would help us in some situations where people have offered to take land that we currently have a maintenance station on and build us a new maintenance station somewhere in a more appropriate part of town. And the current law restricts us from doing that. This would enable that to occur.
Just for the record, if I could.
Yes.
Go ahead, Representative. I think normally you have to go through a process that's more bureaucratic as to moving from one site to another. This has been expedited.
Representative Crummell, Representative Brzezinski, that's correct.
And the dash ones meet the satisfaction of ODOT at this point?
That didn't have an impact on
it. Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Kitts.
I would move that we accept the dash one amendments into House Bill 2739.
Representative Kitts moves the adoption of dash one amendments to House Bill 2739. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, are there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. Representative Kitts.
Mr. Chair, I would move the dash two amendments into House Bill 2739.
Representative Kitts moves the dash two amendments into House Bill 2739. Are there any? Is there any discussion? Are there any objections?
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Nelson.
As I recall from the testimony when we worked on this, and that we asked for a list of state-owned land and by whom and the value from the state and DSL. And they didn't have it, but Dash said they had it, and we've never seen it. Have we? It's never been given to us. Somebody has an inventory of.
That's a very good question.
I have it here in my notes.
That's and you do keep good notes. That is correct. And I didn't. I don't remember if that list was going to be given to you or through Representative Gilman's office. You haven't seen them, have you, Representative? No, he hasn't. He has not seen them. Representative Kitts?
As I recall from the questions that was posed to the folks at the time, it was, could they provide? And the answer was yes. I don't think it was, would they provide?
Oh, okay.
I might add just for a little clarity, what happened was DSL did not have it have a list, but DAS did, and between the two of them, Jeanette Holman, and they said they would get us a list. This was on March 20th. I don't know. We've not seen it yet, and I'm just wondering if now we're just going to the Department of Transportation because they know their land. I'm just curious. And nobody else does, but they do. Is that the reason that this amendment
is
focused on ODOT?
The dash two amendments? I think what it boiled down to, and Doug or Representative Gilman, correct me if I'm wrong, but probably what it boiled down to was that for ODOT to be able to do some exchanges and to expedite the process, this bill worked in that respect to allow them specifically, and ODOT, because of the type of transactions that they run with regards to land acquisitions as well as disposal, they do run a little bit differently than other state agencies, and so that may be one of the reasons why the amendment is specific to them. Am I on the mark there? Okay. Mr. Tindall's giving me the thumbs up, so evidently I know what I'm talking about.
So basically, if I'm sure now how to read this, then Section 2 is just simply a total addition to the bill, but yet in order to make the next step, I guess I wait for the next motion because we haven't got the information yet from the agency. Anyway.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Kitts.
Yeah, speaking of the next step, is that a question? Were you asking a question there?
Yeah, but who cares?
Okay. I would move that we accept House Bill 2739.
Well, can't do that yet because we're still in discussion of the Dash 2 amendments.
I always forget that.
And Representative Nelson's question was relative to the Dash 2 amendments.
So,
Representative Nelson, did I answer your question sufficiently?
I believe what we said, Kelly, being the two women here today, we're operating on the left brain or right brain together. Okay, I just want to be sure. 2739 is simply an addition
Yes.
In addition to this bill. Nothing else is excluded.
That's correct, Representative.
The reason is because ODOT operates not on general fund.
ODOT's kind of a different animal.
Gas taxes. Okay. All right.
Okay.
Does that make sense, Kelly?
Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Okay.
Please don't ask Representative Worth if it makes sense.
Okay, then... Come on now. Okay. Let's see. Is there any other discussion relative to the Dash 2 amendments? Are there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. Now, Representative Gibbs.
Mr. Chair, I would move House Bill 2739 as amended to the House floor and do pass recommendation.
Representative Kitts moves House Bill 2739 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion.
Mr. Chair, I hate to discuss anything today, this afternoon on this, but...
No, that's okay, Representative. Go ahead.
Okay.
Please go ahead.
Since we have requested this information, and the way I read this bill, we're directing the state agencies... Can you hear me, George? Yes. State agencies to sell, exchange, convey, or lease all real property not needed for public use. We were asking testimony of when you said now... But yet we have no way to evaluate what property there is to be sold now, and we may not want them to sell every piece of property right in the state now without this document. So I don't know how to proceed.
That's a good point. I think the one thing that we're sort of doing, Representative, is with the Dash 1 amendments, is relying on this on the agency to determine by written findings that when it's not in the public interest best public interest to sell whatever property the agency might be holding. And so that sort of creates, I don't want to call it an out because that's not the right word, but it is an out. It's a way for the agency to be able to substantiate that there is a need to maintain ownership of the property that might be in question. While at the same time giving the agencies the direction that if they do have surplus properties, to go ahead and move those out. Representative Worth.
Can I ask you a question for clarification? So does this not only authorize them to go ahead and sell off real property, and sorry if I'm ag and natural resources, but doesn't this also, I guess, establish a presumption that it is not in the public's interest to maintain the property?
That's a good question. I suppose it would. Representative Mabry, you want to tackle that one?
Well, I guess I don't know that I can specifically answer it for here, but I know in county government when we had properties that perhaps seemed unnecessary for county government, there oftentimes were. There were properties that were deeded as open space for subdivisions and those kind of things that we needed to hold on to, that we didn't have the discretion. The other things that were projected needs to the future that made them not unnecessary for public use, but they weren't being used there right now. And I think we hire professional people to try to make those judgments. This is, in my opinion, just a mechanism to direct department heads that have control over real property to say it's in the best interest of the state to make those properties available for private use if, in fact, it's determined that there's not a public need, and so I think it would be inappropriate for us to direct staff to just willy nilly dispose of property because we didn't have any obvious need for it right at this moment. But that's why we hire professional staff, and I think we need to rely on them. But I think this does send that message that it would be our desire to move those properties into private ownership if there's not a compelling need that we have.
Does that answer the question?
Mr. Chair, I guess one other issue we have is, you know, who gets the money?
Well, I do, of course.
And we recently we talked about the fact that a lot of this property came out of the original land grant, whatever, and, you know, should that money be going to schools? And so I don't know. I guess we could pass the bill and go for amendments on the Senate side. However, I'm afraid for Representative Gilman that the questions would be so without answers that we might not get past the House. And it's a very good bill. In fact, I've since requested the same information and the same maps for the entire state. So I don't know what to do.
Okay. Representative Gilman, do you have any idea what happens to the money if an agency sells? Does the money revert to the agency, or does it go
most
to the common school fund?
Most of the money will end up in the common school fund.
Okay.
But there may be some monies that would revert to the agency, but I think almost always it would end up in the common school fund.
Okay.
And I'm not an authority on this, but I appreciate the discussion because it's giving me clues to be ready for when hopefully you'll pass this and I get to carry it on the floor.
Would it be possible, Mr. Chair, if we could ask Biscoe to give us the answer on that, of who gets the money? And on the first list, I used this for an example the other day with the media, just to give you an example. And as we started through it, it was there's all sorts of Kelly, between you and me, all sorts of different types of funding. In fact, I think maybe here, like it was. Of course, ODOT, the Department of Veteran Affairs, Department of State Lands, and just this happened to relate to one piece. And Department of Oregon State Parks Department. So for one plot that we had, there were four different owners, but where the money goes and who, and also on some of the land, certain entities were to, maybe they don't want the land, but they get the minerals. So I just a little curious about how we're to answer that. Maybe we ought to get a reading from the fiscal, the LFO,
the
revenue office.
The one issue that we're running up against here is that we are up against our deadline. We've really got to, if we're going to do anything with this bill, we need to move it out.
Well, it's a good
Would it be acceptable to you for Representative Gilman in carrying this bill on the floor to answer those questions? And then if the answers were not satisfactory, you, of course, would have the option of voting against the bill on the floor.
Well, it could be put in the Conference Committee, could it not?
It has to go to the Senate first because this is a House bill. If it passes the Senate and if they amend it when it came back, it would either go to a Conference Committee or a concurrence vote.
Or could it be referred to another committee if it looks like the vote's not there prior to the House getting it? Or
well, that's what the point I'm trying to make is that we need to either move it today or
okay.
It's dead.
Okay.
Representative Mabry.
I think perhaps a partial answer to that question, and I think it's appropriate for Representative Gilman to ferret it out, but partial answer, oftentimes properties are from like a dedicated funds, and I would suspect that ODOT properties, because that's dedicated funds, would go to ODOT to use. Mm. Oregon Military Department would have the same thing. I suspect that Oregon Parks may in some cases have that. And then the remainder that was not designated would go somewhere else, would be my guess.
Well, I think what we found, Mr. Chair, was that some of these were easements and things like that at a time where before, you know, a route changed, for example, like the river changed. So some of the reasons we have.
Yeah.
Whatever. It's a good bill. I just know we got a lot of details.
You would like, and maybe Representative Gilman could address those in his exuberant floor speech that he's going to deliver.
All right.
Is there any, provided it passes this committee, any other discussion? Gina, you want to call the roll, please?
Mr. Chair, can I...
I'm sorry. Wait. Representative Worth, I'm sorry.
I just quickly want to get on the record that I understand this bill to do more than really to facilitate the sale of real property by state agencies that are deemed not to be needed for public use. I think it's, I don't know if intended or not, but I think this bill's really establishing the presumption that not dispensing with real property is not in the best interest. And by having to justify that, I think we're setting up a precedent that I don't agree with. So.
Mr. Chair.
Okay. Representative Brzezinski.
I'm going to be supporting the bill here in the committee. I want to hear from Mr. Representative Gilman on the floor before as to some of the issues that have been raised. But I think at this point, knowing the lateness of the time, let's get it moving and hopefully have that discussion.
Okay. Okay. Great. Any other discussion? Gina, now would you call the roll, please? Excuse?
Aye.
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 No.
Aye. House Bill 2739, as amended, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Representative Gilman will carry the bill. Okay. Thank you. Okay. Well, let's see. We just had another member walk in. Representative. Pardon? Representative Krupp, can you kind of hang out for a couple minutes, or do you?
I'd be happy to do that for you.
Oh, that would be terrific. Then in that case, I would like to go to a work session on 3380. That's the one you're talking about, right? I'm going to go to a work session on 3380, and I understand that Chuck Smith from the Treasurer's Office is here and needs to come up and share some words of wisdom with us.
Well, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Chuck Smith, and I'm Director of Debt Management with the Oregon State Treasury. And I believe I'm here to address a rather specific interest that the Treasury had in House Bill 3380-5 amendments. And that interest is really on page 1, lines 15 through 19, and it had to do with transfer or assigning documents, borrowing documents. We're fine with those particular amendments. Overall, you know, we have a neutral stance on the bill. We just had one narrow concern about inadvertent assignment and creating public securities when there was no intention to create a public securities. This answers it. The dash 5 with respect to that concern answers it. So we're fine with that.
Okay. So so you have no problem with the dash 5s being adopted into the bill or being amended into the bill and then moving it onto the floor. Is that?
That's correct, Mr. Okay. Chair. As I said, we are neutral on the bill. We just had one very specific.
Okay. And I think I'm trying to remember, was it Representative Worth and Representative Brzezinski that had the question about that? Line 15 to 19 on page 1 of the dash 5s, Representative him.
Yeah.
Okay. That was your concern from this morning, wasn't it?
It was.
I'm sorry, I kind of thought you...
we were doing something, working on another one.
It was on the dash 5s, looking at line 16 through 19. And basically, the way it reads, it says the right to receive payment from the board under an agreement entered into pursuant to this subsection may not be transferred or assigned in whole or in part without the written consent of the Department of Administrative Services. The question or concern that we raised was, is there some way that this sets up for a lender or, to say, the seller of property to one of these quasi-agencies to come against the state as a whole? Because somehow we're maintaining some type of control over the property. I know the intent of the proponents is to limit responsibility and of the obligation to the commission or the board. and I attempted to try to get some information from this morning and just was not able to get that clarified.
Mr. Chair, Representative, there's a member of the AAG, Attorney General's Office, in the audience that is the AAG for the semi-independent boards, and perhaps that person would be the source to get the correct answer here.
Great.
And that person would be right there and on her way up.
That's great.
I was going to say, go ahead and stay where you are.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Christine Shute. I'm from the Oregon Attorney General's Office, and I was involved in drafting some of the language that ultimately became the Dash 5 amendments. Now, as I heard your question this afternoon, Representative Przanski, I understand. May I borrow this remark? I understand that you have some concern that giving the Department of Administrative Services authority to give consent to selling the loan, in essence, might create some sort of liability for the state as a whole.
Yes.
And I can't imagine how that would happen, Representative Przanski. This is intended, even before this language was drafted, we've been consistently telling the semi-independent boards that the only thing they have to borrow against is their income stream and their own, their own personal, so to speak, property, because they can't pledge the general fund or any property of the state of Oregon in any way, and that needs to be really clear in any borrowing documents that they would enter into. This is just designed to say that after they have entered into some sort of an agreement, that the loan body can't sell that loan to someone else. I'm sure you're familiar, for example, with home mortgages are frequently bundled and sold in a secondary market. That couldn't happen with this particular document. And that's because of concerns that Treasury raised about creating some kind of security out there without their oversight. Am I right? Correct. Have I stated that correctly?
That's correct. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, Mr.
Chair. Representative Przanski.
So, in follow-up, what we have on the record is that these quasi-independent agencies or commissions in no way are going to obligate the state as a whole for any obligations they may incur in the purchase of property.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Przanski, yes, that has been our advice all along, with or without the extra language referencing the constitutional limitation.
I understand that's the advice. I just want to make sure that's what it says in the law, so when anybody enters into a contract with these groups, they understand they're limited.
Yeah. No, it's a legitimate concern.
Okay.
Fine.
Okay. Great. Thank you. Representative Nelson?
Yes. Thank you. It's Mr. Schmidt.
Smith.
Smith.
Representative. Mm-hmm.
And...
Shoot.
Thank you for being here. One of the semi-independent state agencies in the somewhere in the ORS is here also includes the Children's Trust Fund. Mm-hmm. And I was told earlier, as we talked about these were all licensing boards. However, under this category, we do find this trust fund. So I'm wondering, is this all inclusive or not?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Nelson, I think I haven't looked at the list again this afternoon before coming over of who's included, but it's my recollection that the trust fund is the only agency that's semi-independent that's not one of the professional licensing boards, and there are a handful of them. In fact, the trust fund is the one agency semi-independent that our section does not represent, and I have very limited knowledge about that particular agency.
Okay, so if I could follow up.
You may follow up.
If these are not listed, then how do we know who these apply to? I have a problem with the word agency and semi-independent. And then in the House bill, they're not listed at all. So I find that just about gives everybody.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Nelson, they are listed in ORS Chapter 182. They're listed in one of the statutes there, and I don't happen to have that one with me. I brought the debt limitation statutes, but they are listed specifically in the statute. I think it's somewhere around 182. here it is, 182, 451, and 452, and 454 give you a list of semi-independent state agencies. And I could briefly read these into the record if you think that would be useful, Mr. Chairman.
Why don't you go ahead, Ms. Chu?
Okay.
Thank you.
Those semi-independent agencies are the State Board of Massage Therapists, the Physical Therapist Licensing Board, the State Landscape Contractors Board, and that's from 182.451. Then we have 182.452 that talks about the Children's Trust Fund. And I think the last section is 182, this is ORS 182.454, talks about the Board of Architect Examiners, the Landscape Architects Board, the Board of Examiners for Engineering and Land Surveying, the Geology Board, and Optometry Board. And to the best of my knowledge, that's it.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Nelson.
Yeah, just continue. I guess I'm just trying to figure out what we're doing because the relating clause relates to an amendment to ORS 182-466, and the list is 182-451 and 452. Mm-hmm. So we're relating to something that we're not, this doesn't apply to.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Nelson, if you pull out ORS Chapter 182, you can follow through from the definitional sections and this lead-in reference to the powers granted by 182.456 and 182.472. It all ties together, so it's limited to those boards. I think I forgot one board, one semi-independent appraisers board, appraiser certification and licensure. I don't think they were on this list.
Okay, thank you.
But those are the semi-independents, and this statute applies, in my opinion, pretty clearly only to them if you pull out the whole chapter and piece it through, and I admit it's kind of a circuitous way to get there. In other words, it doesn't apply to all state agencies, just that list that I read you.
Does that answer your question, Representative?
No, sir, but I'm going to just pass.
No.
I just, if I might have one statement, if I could. My concern is that when these, quote, semi-independent boards are operating on behalf of their membership, whether it's by license, and earlier today, heaven forbid, I used commodity commission. You know, just
excuse
you're
me.
Paying your way no matter what, and you don't have a vote. It's an abuse of the, First Amendment rights,
mm-hmm.
And that's what I'm worried about happening here because the licensor, I guess we're calling it, should be mutual state agencies rather than semi-independent, so that the members have a right to what is happening with the purchase of their money. I mean, with what is being purchased with their money. And there's no protection. Mm-hmm. Since the Commodity Commission's just lost, with the Supreme Court ruling, because they have no say on the use of their money, mm-hmm. I'm concerned that in this case, they don't either.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're in trouble. By passing this, that I will shut up and let somebody else deal with it, I guess.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, Representative Nelson, if you'd like, I'd be glad to spend any amount of time talking to you about this that would be useful to you.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Kitts?
Mr. Chair, I would ask unanimous consent of the committee to move both the Dash 2 and Dash 5 amendments to...
I actually need you to do it procedurally. I need you to do it one at a time.
One at a time.
Yes, sir.
I'll move the Dash 2 into House Bill 3380.
Thank you. Representative Kitts moves the Dash 2 amendments into House Bill 3380. Is there any discussion? Is there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. Representative Kitts?
Mr. Chair, I would move the Dash 5 amendments into House Bill 3380.
Thank you. Representative Kitts moves the Dash 5 amendments into House Bill 3380. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. Representative Kitts?
I would move House Bill 3380 to the floor as amended with the due pass recommendation.
This doesn't have a subsequent referral, does it? Okay. Representative Kitts moves House Bill 3380 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, Ginny, you want to call the roll, please? Excused.
Aye.
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 Aye. House Bill 3380, as amended, having received the Constitution majority, is declared passed to the floor.
Butler.
Shall we have Representative Butler carry his own bill? Okay.
Excellent suggestion.
The only one that can understand it.
Well, yeah, and Representative Zansky. Okay. We'll have Representative Butler, if you'll notify him that we're going to have him carry his own bill. Thank you. And with that, I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 3380. Representative Krupp, you're here for HJR 19, is that right? I'm going to open a work session on HJR 19.
Members, have you been provided with copies of fiscal impact for HGR 19? Do members have copies of those?
I don't. Patrick, I do not.
With the dash ones and the original.
I have a fiscal for both of those. I can get you a copy.
That'd be great. All
right. Okay. Make sure.
Representative Krupp.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr.
Patrick. You don't have it.
Whenever you're ready, Representative, you go ready.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. It's my pleasure to be before you today. I'll try to be brief. I know that's difficult for any of you to believe, but I will give it my very best. I'm State Representative Jeff Krupp from House District 17. I have before you a simple but yet complicated concept. I know that's an oxymoron and somewhat contradictory, but is nonetheless the case. HJR 19, as is being handed out to you, basically just tells you what this bill does in a nutshell and has a chart on the backside that will demonstrate the effectivity had this process been in place the last 10 years. It sets a constitutional spending limit of 8% per biennium, which is 4% per year. If there is the need for flexibility in that regard, it can be exceeded by a two-thirds vote of the Legislative Assembly. And I'm not necessarily married to the two-thirds provision, Mr. Chair, or three-fifths would be acceptable. It was just the idea that I'd like to have something a little higher bar than just a straight 31 vote or 16 majority. Number two is it establishes the Oregon Stability Fund, quote-unquote, a rainy day fund. And it will receive any of the excess general fund collections above the 8% spending cap. So in other words, if we spend 8% and we get 10% in revenue, the extra 2% goes into the stability fund. And that continues on for a number of years until that stability fund reaches 25% of the previous biennium's general fund appropriation. So what happens after we reach that 25% figure? Well, then the additional excess revenues above 8% on a regular basis will be kicked over into the Common School Fund. The fourth point is that you cannot use the Oregon Stability Fund, i.e. our rainy day fund, unless the same triggers go into effect that are currently in place, that this body put in place for the Education Stability Fund, which is a number of conditions that have to be met before we can access those dollars. The same concept. Basically, we don't want the legislature to just be able to grab that money at their will. There has to be a bona fide need for it. In this case, it would be two quarters of consistent economic downturn. What would have happened if we done this in the last 10 years? Well, we would have saved about $9.5 billion with investment returns. And that's, if you look to the backside of your little sheet that I handed out, it demonstrates from 1991... The 91-93 biennium to the 01-03 biennium over a 10-year time period, the far bars on the left, which go the highest, are what we actually appropriated as a legislative body during those years. The 01-03 bar is somewhat less than the 99-01 because that's reflective of our fifth special or all of our special session adjustments. The second series of bars that continue upward, clear over to the very extreme right of 2011 to 2013. That represents what it would look like if we had spent 8% and continue to spend at only 8% per biennium. So you can see that the two lines, the two linear lines, represent a fair divergence there. The small bars down at the bottom, starting in 93 through 95, clear to 01-03, demonstrate two things. They demonstrate the amount of money that gets deposited into the reserves based on the savings, and this is based on what the historical performance was. And the second high bar there demonstrates very clearly how that money would have been invested and the same investment returns as we received in the public employees retirement system during those years. And as you can see, that had we had this in place, we would have spent less money and we would have saved money not only in the stability fund to help us through the very conditions that we are encountering today, but also we would have put several billion dollars in the common school fund, a total of about $9.5 billion. And the whole reason I'm bringing this concept forward, members and Mr. Chair, is because we have endured six special sessions in this process. No one has enjoyed that. It has brought considerable distress on many areas of Oregon society. And I think this demonstrates very clearly that had we been a bit more prudent and actually put money away in savings and invested that money, during the great years of the 90s, we would have a very different situation than what we have today. And I think it's time we embrace this concept. I think it's time we did this. We've talked about it for a long time. Here's an opportunity to do it. And I would stress to you that if we need to exceed the 8% constitutional cap, there is a mechanism by which we could do it. Say, for instance, that the voters passed an initiative that said we need to fund K-12 education at 60% or 65% of our general fund revenues. There's actually been some talk of that nature. Should they do something like that, that may require us to spend more than the 8% per biennium. We could do that. Under this bill, there's flexibility to make that happen. So, Mr. Chair, that's the concept, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that the members may have.
I think, Representative, when you mentioned spending 65% of our state general fund revenues on K-12 education, the folks in the back of the room's eyebrows really went up. And I think you just found some new friends.
Mr. Chair, I'm not necessarily advocating for
myself.
I'm just saying that if those fine gentlemen were successful in persuading the voters of this state or the members of the legislature that that was appropriate, that under this constitutional concept, there would be a mechanism by which we could do that.
Okay.
We could comply with the wishes of the voters.
Okay. Thank you. Are there questions for Representative Brzezinski?
Yeah. So, Representative Croft, I guess what you're describing to us is really the dash one. As
yes.
compared to what the original bill was.
Yes.
Right. And just following up with that, I mean, it seems to me that your purpose and intent is basically to try to capture money that could potentially be put in some type of reserve or stability fund for future use if necessary. And as you said, it could be for use for education.
That's correct.
We could, in fact, use this for K-12 education.
Yes.
Or any other level.
Or any other level of education that the legislature deemed appropriate. Yes.
Okay. Let me ask you one other question, because it's kind of ironic. It seems to me in my short terms here, just being here since 95, we've had this discussion, I think, when we actually put the kicker into the Constitution.
Yes.
Of instead of doing that, to actually start, quote unquote, a rainy day fund or an education stabilization fund. And for whatever reason, this body decided to refer out to the voters a measure that actually now has a kicker in the Constitution that we have more difficulty to control or to access if, when need be. But it seems to me that you're really wanting to maybe undercut, but gather the money before it would kick and put it into a stabilization fund?
Mr. Chair and Representative Przanski, that's an excellent point, and I thank you for raising that, because that actually is not the effect of this legislation. This actually works in harmony with the current constitutional amendment regarding the kicker. I and my staff went over this with legislative revenue today to make sure that we fully understand how this process works. So let me just give you a quick rundown as I've understood it today from legislative revenue. Let's say, for instance, that we project a growth rate of 10%. Under my scenario, we could only spend 8. We project a growth rate of 10%. We actually receive 10%. 2% would go into the stability fund, or if it was full, would kick over into the common school fund. But what happens if we project a growth rate, a revenue of 10%, but we actually receive 12? Well, as it has been explained to me, that then the 12% is 2% over what the projected revenue was. That then kicks the kicker. And that amount of money from 2% down to 10% is what gets refunded to the taxpayers. It doesn't go from 12% all the way down to the 8%. So what would happen is you would refund the 2% from 12% down to 10 to the voters, but the 10% down to the 8, that 2% goes right back into the common school fund or the stability fund. So they actually work together. And in this particular case, if I recall correctly, the kicker actually technically kicked 3 times during this 10 years, was suspended by the legislature at one of those times, and then the citizens of Oregon received the benefit of the kicker issue for 2 biennium, as I recall correctly. And I hope, and if I'm incorrect, please feel free to correct me there. And I would say, Mr. Chair and members, you know, if you have suggestions on how to make this a better concept, I am certainly open to that. Any ideas that you would have to make this a more viable idea, or an idea that could be fully embraced by the body and become an opportunity for the voters to say yes or no.
Okay. Are there any other questions for Representative Krupp, Representative Nelson, and then Representative Worth?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Representative Krupp, having served with you 2 years as my chair of agriculture, I know you got the right heart, and I know you've got great concern for the taxpayers of our state, our bankers, our investment bankers, but as well as the well-being, though, overall. And I would love to be able to work with you on this bill. I think there's some other things we can do, but I understand we have to pass it today, move it on, and Lord knows if we'd ever get it back from the Senate, many recommendations for it, but so between here and there, I think there are some refinements we can do from some of the research that some of us have done on other areas of state business. And good for you for staying on target.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Nelson. I appreciate your comments, and I would reiterate again that if there are good ideas that can be added into this concept, I am more than willing to embrace them, either on the House side, if the Chair would permit more time to consider, if members of the committee have specific ideas they'd like to bring forward. That's at the Chair's discretion, and I'll do whatever he desires in that regard. But it's clearly on the Senate side, too. If it is a concept that is worthy of consideration further by this body and or the full legislative body, I'm happy to embrace any changes to make it better.
Okay. Thank you. Are there any? Is there any other? Yes, Representative Worth. I'm sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I almost forgot.
So, Representative Krupp, they use the same this rainy day proposal uses the same triggers as the current Education Stability Fund. Is there any, priority-based which fund would be used first, and can this rainy day fund also be used for education as well as the Education Stability Fund?
Mr. Chair and Representative Worth, another really great question, because the Common School Fund that would receive money under this proposal can be accessed by the legislature, as I understand it, statutorily, but only to a point. That could occur at any time, whether this proposal is in place or not. The Stability Fund, however, would be the the first fund to ever be accessed for anything of this type. I guess my understanding of how we do business around here now, having been in this building for my third session, is that if we had a savings account for the general fund, we would go to that first before we did anything else. And I would offer up to you the various circumstances we're involved with today. I don't know of anyone who's advocating we go into the common school fund today and use money out of it for anything that's general fund related. So, yes, you could access the stability fund for K-12 education. You could access the Education Stability Fund for K-12 education, but both of them would have to meet the same requirements that are in the current law regarding what triggers go into place before you can access those dollars. And there's a reason we did that, obviously, as a legislative body, and I think they were wise. There has to be a bona fide emergency, in my mind, before we should go to the Education Stability Fund for anything, and before we would go to the Stability Fund for the dollars.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I would urge you to for this bill to move forward. It has kind of come to my attention that it seems to have a constitutional problem at this point. But if you want to work with members on some amendments or and that sort of thing, then we can bring it back, provided the Speaker will approve my agenda.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I really do appreciate that consideration and would be happy to. And we'll continue to talk to each member of this committee. I have not chatted with two of you about this yet, so I will continue to do so. And if the constitutional problem is rectified, perhaps we can move forward.
Thank you.
Chair, can I ask you?
I'm sorry. Yes,
I just wondering about if we can find out during this process if there's any fiscal attached to that.
The fiscal statement that was provided to me shows that there is no fiscal attachment at all.
Okay. Just Representative, I did just happen to think of a question that I want to ask you, and I just primarily to put it on the record, and that is, what about the charge that might be made that, you know, once again we are seeking a way to actually tie the hands of the legislature from being able to do their constitutionally appointed duty, which is to, you know, make laws and balance the state spending.
Mr. Chair, in response, I would offer you this. We first of all, this bill has a mechanism by which the 8% constitutional cap can be avoided with, again, a large majority vote of the legislative body, number one. And secondly, we're in the circumstances that we are today that have not been pleasant for the state, for our constituents, for us, because we have not done anything of this type. Had we just kept our spending to 10% and saved some of that money and invested it, we would have easily 25% of our general fund appropriation, easily. In fact, my original figures were 10%, and instead of saving $9.5 billion, we would have saved $6.9 billion, actually. Again, assuming the same investment returns that we received over the years, the great years of the stock market boom and so forth of the 90s. And I'm not suggesting that that will occur again. I'm obviously hopeful that it will. But if we don't do something like this, in many ways, the legislature, in my opinion, has not exercised wise judgment entirely in the budgeting process, because we failed to save any money and set aside for the very circumstances we're facing today. And I think now is the time, based on the budget that was released today, mm-hmm. Which is a bit shocking to a great many people, and based on the great angst that there is out there amongst the public on so many issues they care about, I think the opportunity is for us to embrace a concept like this. It doesn't have to be mine, and it doesn't have to be exactly what this is. But had we done anything like this previously, Mr. Chair, our circumstances today would be much easier for everyone. And I think it's time we did this.
Okay. Thank you. Appreciate that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
With that, then, I'm going to close the work session on HJR 19. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 3219. I have a couple of, and Patrick, if you can kind of remind us a little bit about this bill, but I know that there's a couple of people that would like to get some things on the record with regards to this bill.
Sure, Mr. Chair. Sure, House Bill 3219, we heard on the 8th of April. The bill allows the Oregon National Guard Youth Challenge Program to receive state school fund distributions. There's an emergency clause. The bill would take effect on July 1st, and the bill has a subsequent referral to the Ways and Means Committee.
Okay. The bill does have a subsequent referral.
Yes,
thank you. Mr. Bennett, Mr. Rose, Mr. Marshall, why don't you all just come on up? We got three chairs. Notice I didn't say three cheers. I said three chairs. Good afternoon. Thank you for being here.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee for record, I'm Ozzie Rose of the Confederation of Oregon School Administrators, and I'm here to ask you to not move House Bill 3219. House Bill 3219, and this is not a program discussion. The program under is a very good program, and you've heard some of the kids and so forth. The issue is the kids that are being served here are kids that are being served in an alternative program. And there are alternative programs all over the state, and they operate by contracting for their educational services with a local school district. Bend is the contractor, and they enter into a contract to provide the educational program, not the total program. Bend also operates contracts with six other alternative programs. Portland has a number of alternative programs all over the state. Under the same law about alternative educational programs. This bill proposes to move the bill in, or the, this particular program into the same kind of a relationship with the state school fund as the two programs where the kids are adjudicated and signed there because of action by the courts. And we don't want you to open up the door to all alternative programs. The bill is here because at one time there was general fund money to support the other portions of the program besides the educational portion. And that was cut out during the special sessions. And I think you should go back and put that money directly in it. And then they get matching money from the feds. But in lieu of the cuts you made in the special session, now the move is let's go to the state school fund and get the money out of that fund to run this program beyond the educational portion that is currently being paid for through the current process. And there are a lot of good programs that are in trouble because money is short inside the state school fund. And we object to any effort to go into the state school fund for new kinds of ideas. We don't object to the it's a very good program. But you should go back to Ways and Means and go to their budget and put the $1 million or whatever it takes to run that side of the program and continue it. But we do not think you should, because you cut the general fund support for it, turn around and say, well, the state school fund's a big pot of money. Let's go get it there.
Okay. Thank you. Whichever one of you would like to go.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, John Marshall representing the Oregon School Boards Association, and I would agree with everything Ozzie said. I did want to point out I have a list here of the private alternative programs that operate within the Portland School District. There are 28 of them, and they're all serve mostly high school kids, but they're all privately run, and the funding for those programs is arranged between the Portland School District and those alternative education program providers. I've been told that there are performance-based criteria, so when kids go into these alternative programs, and they're mostly, I would submit, for kids that are at risk of dropping out of school, the very same as the program that from Bend. These 28 different programs, and I believe they're all different based on the particular needs of students, serve 1,381 students, so 28 of these programs. And I believe they're all valuable. They're all valuable to serve the needs of students, particularly those that are at risk of dropping out of school or in trouble. And they're probably as valuable as the program that's located over in Bend. And again, they're operated between a contract between the school district and the program. To repeat what Ozzie said, we don't believe that we ought to take one program and single it out and create a special funding mechanism inside the state school fund, because you're simply opening the door for the 28 in Portland and probably dozens and dozens that are all over the state, operated under contract with individual school districts.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I, Chuck Bennett, Confederation of Oregon School Administrators. I think just in the interest of time, I don't really have anything to add. Right.
Okay.
Now. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you. Questions for this panel? Representative Nelson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Rose and Mr. Bennett and Mr. Mitchell, thank you for being here because you care about the kids. Did I say something?
No.
Well, wrong. Anyway.
No, ma'am, you have not said anything.
I thought maybe
wrong.
I got a name wrong or
no?
Something all of a sudden.
No.
Okay. What I want to say is I'm an absolute energized, you know, that rabbit that keeps going back and forth about this program, and I have been since day one in the last session. And I'm going to continue to be because there are kids in our state who need this type of self-discipline. And I don't know an alternative school in the state that has the success record that this program has. Now, y'all can show me differently and great, and I hope you do, but the success rate and the follow-up of these students is incredible. So I just wanted to tell you a little bit of math that I did. You know, if we took, of course, you can't take Portland schools, where the Portland schools get, you know, $9,000 to $11,000 a student, and us poor schools, you know, get $5,000, $5,500. But just say we took an average of $5,000 a student for 8 years. Is that $40,000? Okay. Then considering we have 10,000 dropouts every year, that's a $400 million. So wouldn't it be more prudent to put our money that's being wasted in the general school program into a program like that, where you've got a success program that you know, speaks for itself, gives self-discipline, gives a future, a career, than us keep throwing away $400 million every year? So anyway, I think you can
everybody
do.
Everybody looks at us.
Well, I think you can do both.
Math is interesting, but I'm.
Well, let help me, you know, because I've, you know, only been a budget director for 35 years. So help me around the world.
I don't have any doubt that if you wanted to take the time, you could get somebody from one of these 28 programs to come in here and tell you about their success. And I'm not degrading in any way the program in Bend. It's based on the testimony, it's obviously a very valuable program, and it meets the needs of those students. But I would submit that probably every single one of these programs also meet the needs of students and perhaps have a rate as successful or maybe even more successful than the program in question. The issue is, and as Ozzie suggested, it's not a discussion about the value of this program. We'll stipulate that it's extremely valuable. The question is, do you take one single program and create special treatment inside the state school fund at the expense of every other school district and alternative education program in the state? And we don't believe you should.
A follow-up, Mr. Chair. That's not my point. My point is I don't want to put down any of these schools. In fact, you know, one of my best, dearest friends has an alternative school in Sheridan, and I vouch for her and that program forever. Her name's Mina Dick. Y'all probably know. But anyway, what I'm saying is there are students that do not function without discipline. And I haven't been a single parent with some sons, except I think it was my daughter I would have sent to Bend. My boys seemed easier to raise. But I just would say that there are students who need to be in a disciplined program like that, so why waste, you know, that $5,000 every year of their lives when they could be in that program, relieve the public general quote schools of that burden so they can spend their resources and times on students that are not going to drop out at eighth grade. I'm just using eighth grade level. I'm just saying there's a place for it, and therefore the money that's left in the school system is more wisely used for those kids who function good in a public school environment. I think it's called braiding, and I suggest this to the governor, and I suggested this to the Department of Education, because you need all three. We're not taking anything away. We're just taking those students that don't function, that cause misery, and I know I was a teacher, you know, that cause misery in the school system, taking them out so the dollars are better spent for those that are paying attention, are self-disciplined, and send these to the school where they need the military, I guess I'm saying heavy hand, I don't mean that wrong, but a lot of us that didn't have men in our families for our kids found we needed that. Wouldn't that be a good thing to do, to have all three and work a way together to make these fit so we have no dropouts? Do you know what I'm saying?
Mr. Chair.
Anyway, it sounds good to me.
Mr. Rose, go ahead.
Mr. Chair, I'd say, Nelson, I concur that the type of program is good for some kids.
Yeah.
The state school fund now clearly... It goes to school districts and then to pay for the educational programs of adjudicated youngsters. And the youngsters that are like those that are served in the program in Bend are served under a contract, and there are lots of programs. And if there's a very clear delineation that only adjudicated kids that are covered in the state school fund, other than through the school districts. And our objection is to, we'll do this time, and we'll be back next time. And because the state school fund's a large pot of money, and it looks like a little bit of this, a little bit of that, it's okay. We don't believe that that's the way you ought to go, and we'd like you not to do that. It's not about whether that's a good program or not. By the way, my secretary's son just graduated there in December. I know a little bit about it.
Okay. So, final question.
Thank you. Representative Mabry?
Mr. Rose, when you talk about adjudicated kids, are you talking about like in my county, I have a regional juvenile facility that we serve their educational needs while they're confined, and those are adjudicated. Is that what you're referring to?
Mr. Chair, I say yes, sir.
Thank you.
And they're in the state
in
school.
In favor of this, because that program doesn't work. We're here to solve problems.
Representative Kittles.
Mr. Chair, I would move 32. Are there amendments 32-19?
No, there are not.
I would move 32-19 to the floor if you pass the amendments.
I need you to amend your motion to go to Ways and Means.
Oh.
It does have a substitute.
Oh, I'm sorry. I did not see that. Mr. Chair, I would move 32-19 to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Okay. Could I ask you to hold up your motion for one, because I just received a note that there's another person that wanted to briefly address us on this issue.
Mr. Chair, I would be more than happy to with the one stipulation that it's new information brought, not simply redundant information. We've heard this bill three times now. I mean, it's feeding a dead horse.
Is it new, Ralph, or is it time to dismount?
Okay,
come on up, both of you.
I'll withdraw my motion.
Please make it new information, and please make it brief.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'll do mine briefly. I really will, because I've sat here an hour and a half, and I intend to get to my meeting in Clackamas County. For the record, my name is Ralph Groner, representing AskMe, and I do represent, for the record, the employees at the Deschutes County program. I'd just like to say, and I'll say this rapidly, that all our young people are high school dropouts in this program. I would like to say that if we're going to compare this program to others, I really would like to know how many of the others are what we call 24/7, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, military based. I compare this program more to Oregon Youth Authority, which gets two times the ADM, because quite frankly, there's not a bit of difference other than they haven't been adjudicated in this state. 80% of our high school kids end up, if they are these kind of dropouts, according to the U.S. Department of Justice, end up in taxpayer-supported system. And those are everything from corrections to welfare, etc. This program has been just named the top program of 80 such military programs in America as the very best in the country. Recently named the top program primarily because we're serving a statewide community, not just Bend. These are, we have students throughout the state. I'll skip all the data, and you can get that from the colonel and from the military department. We feel strongly about this program, and in no way do I want to weaken the state school fund. But I do want to say that these are young people that are now going back into the, our whole job is to get them back into high school and be successful. They were not receiving ADMs when they were dropouts. When we get them back into high school, they are receiving ADM. I'd like to make that point one. I don't know if that's new or old. And I'd also like to say that 25% of our graduates are ending up in either the Marine or Navy. And I'll close on this. I was a kid out of seven kids in Clackamas County, loggers kids. All of us had some few problems. In my case, being an older member of this community, I was allowed by the judge to go directly into the military rather than elsewhere. I was called jail. And the result was I ended up with a successful career in college, a successful career in the military. Those options aren't available today. I think they should be, but they aren't. And the one option that's available to get kids in the military is through this program. 25% of our graduates are going to the military. So when we talk success and trying to compare to other programs in the Portland area, this is a statewide program. And if you want to see the data, you'll see that it encompasses every county in this state. And you'll see that its success is nationally acclaimed. And quite frankly, it saves you tax dollars, which frees up more money from the general fund for K through 12. Thank you.
Ralph, thank you. Are you suggesting, if I may ask you a question, I probably should let Greg go first, but I want to, because I know that you are needing to go to a meeting in Clackamas County, but are you suggesting that one of the reasons why it would be appropriate to put this into the state school fund for the education portion is because of the fact that it is a statewide program and not just for one, or not just in one particular region or city of the state?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Demographics are 70% west of Cascades, 30% east of Cascades. All 36 counties have been served. And then the demographics goes on, but I won't bore you with that. You can be provided that data. It is a statewide program.
Yeah, but I guess what I'm saying is that because one of the arguments is that because it's a special program, it shouldn't necessarily go into the state school fund because folks from COSA and OSBA were very upfront saying it's a very valuable program. They agree with that. What they were contending is the appropriateness of being in the state school fund because of the fact that it's an alternative program, and should all alternative programs be in the state school fund? And what I hear you saying is that because of the fact that it does serve statewide, that sort of creates the nexus and the reason for that it would be appropriate to put it into state school fund. Am I reading you right?
That's one reason. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the other, of course, is that we do get the kids back into the school system very successfully, so they do receive the ADM. Quite frankly, I'm not, again, Ozzie and the gentleman who just spoke are experts on school funding. I'm not at all. Okay. I don't work that issue. I will say that if we had the money in the general fund, of course, we would support that for this program. I have other programs in Portland under MESD that has contracts that I happen to represent with the Portland School District that are wonderful programs. That's what John Marshall is alluding to, and they're wonderful programs. I do see differences in this program in the fact that it is 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It's military-based, and the results are stunning. And they're stunning because they not only mean success to people, but it means success to the school districts in the state that have the kids going back to the schools. And it's just, frankly, as it is a statewide program as compared to other programs. But you tell me another program that's 24 hours, 7 days a week. Totally different program. And therefore, I do think that it should qualify for that kind of funding.
Thank you.
Similar to the School for the Blind.
Representative Krasinski?
Mr. Chair, I guess I'll ask Ralph before he leaves. Acknowledging the program and its similarities to really OIA, shouldn't they be funded at the same level, either both of them at 2.0 or both of them at 2.5?
Mr. Chair, Representative Krasinski, that's a correct question. It is, from my point of view, 2.0 would be fine. Thank you.
Great. Greg Warnock, Oregon Veterans Association, and what I wanted to do today, I have given written testimony, so I won't bore you with all of that. But I wanted to make sure you got this fact sheet for one thing, because it gives some very pertinent information and gives you some options for ADM calculations as well. The 2.0 is really the target there, but it could survive with less than that also. The previous testimony told us that this isn't about program, but it really is about program. If this is not funded appropriately, because it is a 24/7 program, it's a high maintenance program, it does reach all 36 counties in the state. If it's not funded appropriately, then it has a huge risk of collapsing, and we want to make sure that the program continues. So it is about program, not just about funding and where does the funding come from. But I also want to tell you two things. One is Oregon Veterans Association supporting this because it fits our charter to support this type of program, a military-type school. We are also supporting it with charitable contributions and other things. So this is a very key program for our association. The other thing I want to say is I have a 16-year-old son in the program right now. He's there. And he wakes up at 5:30 in the morning and gets his little drill, and he goes to school. And this program, make no mistake whatsoever, this is an academic program with a military-type structure. And it's for kids that... and I don't know that we heard this testimony before, but it's for kids that are potential dropouts or dropouts. I have five kids. Four of them are brilliant, straight-A students. And then I have Andrew, who's a kid, who's a great kid, never been in trouble with the law, there's not a drug issue. But academically, he has struggled. He's been in the Salem-Keizer School District all his life, most of his life. And he's been through two alternative educational programs. Both turned out to be, frankly, from a parent's perspective, a little more than babysitting. And they received a little more money, and they had funded a great program from the district perspective, but it did nothing for my kid, nothing. And he was on his way out, and when we heard about this program, he actually brought it to us, my 16-year-old, and said, I know some other kids that have succeeded through this, and I'd like to try that because I want to be successful. And he wants to go in the military. He's one of the 25%. He's going to come back. He's going to have his GED as a 16-year-old in June, and then we'll go to Chemeketa and finish his diploma program. So he'll actually have a diploma and join the military, the Navy, later. So I just want to make this, I want to personalize it a little bit. It's very, very important that it's funded appropriately. 2.0 or 2.5
okay.
is what we're asking.
Thank you. Thank you. Representative Kitts?
Mr. Chair, I would move House Bill 3219 to the Committee on Ways and Means. With due pass recommendation.
Representative Kitts moves House Bill 3219 to the Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. I want to say from the outset, I wasn't sure whether or not I wanted to move this down there, but I think as we've listened to the testimony, and I recognize that there are some folks that would tend to disagree with this, but what I would like to do is send the bill there so that it's part of the discussion, at least from a standpoint, because it can't go on without that being part of the discussion. Most definitely, if the program would be put back in the general fund, that maybe would be the preferred alternative. But I think that let the Committee on Ways and Means make the determination as to whether or not this is appropriate use of state school funds, and whether or not it's something that should be straight general fund. Or part of the state school fund because of the interaction between the districts and the state and the districts and the program.
Other discussion, Representative Kuczynski?
Mr. Chair, I think the program has demonstrated itself as being a good program for specific students, and it's something I think the state should continue to have. My only concern that I have as the bill is currently written is that it sets up a funding level that's different from the two detention programs, one Oregon Youth Authority versus the ones that are, I guess, the juvenile detention, which is, must be at the local level of the county, 1.5 versus 2.0. It's my understanding that based on the motion that this is going to be going to Ways and Means if it passes, and at that point, hopefully, they will be looking at the big picture for all of the funding as to what is appropriate and how. With that, I'm going to go ahead and give a yes vote for the program. I am concerned as to setting the discrepancy in the funding that when we have, I think, just as similar programs that are in need, they should be funded the same.
Appreciate your comments. Any other discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Nelson.
When I first heard about this program 4 years ago, I was so excited about it. I went back to Superintendent Paula Radish in Newburgh, and I said, you won't believe this program. And I said, you know, you have such a burden here. And I used to teach the kids in California. When I taught, you had to go to school till you were 18. And so we called it continuation school. So I taught these kids that they have been after school after I taught all day. And it was tough. And I said, I have a solution. You know, it's kind of like getting rid of Sim and Cam. You're going to have more time, more resources. Let's get these kids that need self-discipline, need to learn something, you know, about putting order back in their lives into this program and get them restarted and let them come back and save money. And she was thrilled. And I, so ever since then, every superintendent I've talked to, I said, here's a solution that is just awesome. And it doesn't mean later they might go to an alternative school, Japanese alternative school, or one for arts or whatever. But it's just a fabulous program. I want to give Colonel Caldwell and that whole team the credit because it's awesome. And I'm for it.
Okay, thank you. Any other discussion? Gina, call the roll, please. Excused?
Aye.
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 Excuse? Aye. House Bill 3319 is referred to the Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. Thank you all. We'll close the work session on House Bill 3219. Because I only recessed the work session on 3114, I'm going to take it out of recess and point out, committee, that apparently at this point 3114 does have a constitutional issue, and so I'm going to close the work session on 3114. Let's see. I'm going to open a... We already did that one. I'm going to open a concurrent... I can't do it. I can't do work sessions concurrently, can I? I have to do them all. I have to do them separately. Okay. I'm going to open a work session on House Memorial 4. And, Patrick, you want to tell us about this? And Michael, do you want to say anything or...
Okay. I can tell you about it, Mr. Chair. House Memorial 4 urges the United States Congress to give first priority to defense appropriation bills.
Is that all you're going to tell us about it?
It's the bill, as you'll see, members, has a fairly exhaustive list of whereases, as many memorials do. What the measure would do is, if the measure is passed by the committee and by the House of Representatives, a letter will be sent to the members of the Congress urging them to do, as it says in the top, to give first priority to defense appropriation bills.
Okay. Is there any discussion among the committee? Representative Kitts.
Mr. Chair, I would move... House Memorial 4, I guess it is, to the floor with a due pass recommendation. I would also say that, for the record, beyond these four, I will not be supporting any more of these. I just did not give the chair a courtesy in advance. I will support what is on the agenda in advance,
but I will not be supporting any more regardless of where they come from.
Okay. Appreciate that. You made the motion. Did you make a motion?
I made a motion, yes.
Was your motion to adopt?
Yes, I did my motion and discussion at the same time, it appears. So
it appears as though you did.
I apologize. I move
that
forward to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
That it be adopted.
Be adopted.
Okay, thank you. Representative Brzezinski.
Mr. Chair, the memorial as it's been written, it seems to me that we should be urging the Congress as its first priority, public education, making certain that we take care of our kids, hunger. I mean, there's so many other areas as compared to defense appropriation, and I would wish to see something dealing with public education or dealing with our issues that are affecting seniors and prescription drugs. I mean, there's so many other areas I'm looking at.
Thank you. Thank you. Any other discussion?
Yeah.
Thank you. Then the motion before us is for House Memorial 4 to be adopted, be sent to the floor with a be adopted recommendation. Thank you. Gina, call the roll, please. Excused.
Aye.
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 No.
Excused. Aye. House Memorial 4, receiving a constitutional majority, is declared passed and is on its way to the floor. Michael, do you know if Representative Canope wants to carry these? Okay. Representative Canope will be the carrier of House Memorial 4. Thank you. I'm going to open close work session on House Memorial 4, open a work session on House Memorial 5. Patrick, you want to tell us about this one, please?
Yes, Mr. Chair. House Memorial 5, similar to House Memorial 4, even briefer, if I can do that. The memorial urges the Oregon Congressional Delegation to work to repeal the death tax, also known as in its formal name as the estate tax.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Kitts.
I would move House Memorial 5 to the floor with a due adopt recommendation.
Representative Kitts moves House Memorial 5 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation. Discussion. Representative Brzezinski.
Now, Mr. Chair, again, I really question sending this type of memorial to our congressional delegation. It seems more appropriate for the middle class and for the poor to be considered as to making certain there's tax equity. Also, I think corporate accountability as to the amount of taxes that are being paid as compared to individuals when we look at this state. There seems to be a discrepancy as to when you have PGE only paying $10 and a minimal tax, and everyone else, individuals, are not as they reaping those types of benefits. So I really would like to see something that was dealing with tax equity for the middle class and for others besides individuals that are going to benefit from the state tax.
Mr. Chair.
Appreciate your comments. Representative Nelson?
Yes, I would certainly just like to say this has been a long time coming, and anything we can do to push for people to keep their hard-earned money in any form, this is one good way. I'm for it.
Okay, thank you. I would just point out that the one thing about the estate tax is that it cuts across everyone's line. If a person is a homeowner, they can benefit from reduction and elimination of the estate tax. And from that standpoint, I'm for it. So
that's like $750,000 home or estate.
Well, you know, when you live in the Portland area, you get close. is there any other discussion? Seeing none, Gina, call the roll, please.
Aye.
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 No.
Aye. Avaki and Worth. Are excused.
Still.
House Memorial 5, receiving the majority, is declared passed to the floor with a be adopted recommendation. I'm going to close and Representative Canope will carry it. I'm going to close the work session on House Memorial 5. I'm going to open a work session on House Memorial 6. Patrick, you want to give us a little provision on this one, please.
Yes, Mr. Chair. House Memorial 6 urges the Oregon Congressional Delegation to work to repeal sunset provisions in the Federal Economic Growth and Tax Relief Reconciliation Act of 2001 that increases tax-deductible limits on contributions to pension individual retirement accounts.
Thank you. Representative Kitts.
Mr. Chair, I would move House Memorial 6 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation.
Representative Kitts moves House Memorial 4 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation. Discussion, Representative Kaczynski.
Oh, you don't? Actually, this one here, when you look at it, I mean, it's one that actually seems to me have some benefit for people across economic status of being able to invest in their future retirement. So I'll leave it at that.
Okay. Thank you. Is there any further discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Nelson.
I'd just like to say anything that increases tax deductible limits and the lawyer agrees with it makes me really happy. So I'm voting for this.
Thank you, Representative Nelson. Is there any other discussion? Seeing none, Gina, call the roll, please. Excuse.
Aye.
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 Excused. Aye. House Memorial 6 receiving the constitutional majority is declared passed to the floor with a be adopted recommendation, and Representative Knope will carry this one also. Close the work session on House Memorial 6.
So do I open the...
Are you going?
Yes.
Okay, I'm going. Representative Prezant.
Mr. Chair, are we not going to hear House Memorial 8?
I think that I have just been made aware that it, at this particular juncture, has a constitutional problem. So I'm going to not.
I just want to give notice at that point. Then, if you're not going to have House Memorial 8 at this point,
right?
And you're getting ready to close, and I think since we're closed our business, I'm going to give notice that minority reports may be filed, possible minority reports in HM 4, HM 5.
Please make a notation that Representative Przanski has served notice of possible minority reports being filed on House Memorial 4 and House Memorial 5. And I believe, Representative, if I'm not mistaken, Patrick will correct me if I'm wrong, you have until 5 p.m. on the next session day.
Monday.
Oh, on Monday?
Mr. Chair, if I may.
Please.
The member provides notice at the meeting or by 5 o'clock on the day of the meeting. That would be today, so he's providing notice during the meeting. He then has 48 or 2 calendar days to provide staff with the minority recommendation.
Is that two? When you say two, is it 2 calendar days? Is that 2 session calendar session days, or is it? I think it is.
Yeah, it's my understanding that since we are after 5 p.m. that I need to give notice probably before the end
of the meeting. Right.
Or before adjournment of the committee meeting during which some final action was taken. If adjournment is later than 5 p.m., so that is correct.
So he's met that. So I just want to make sure that there's not a mix-up as far as when the minority report has to be filed.
And Mr. Chair, of course, just for purposes of explanation, the minority report will require 2 signers, both of whom did not support the majority recommendation. And although Representative Przanski was the only person to vote no, we did have 2 members who were excused who could also be co-signers in the minority report.
Even though they didn't vote no?
They did not vote yes, and that's the requirement. They did not vote yes.
Yeah. It just was.
Okay. So we understand that. So the minority report needs to be filed by Monday at 5 p.m.?
If he provides committee staff with a minority report by Monday at 5 p.m., then we drop the minority report with the bill by Tuesday at 5 p.m.
Okay. Okay, great. So everybody understands on that, right? Okay, with that, then, I think we have done everything. Committee, thank you for your indulgence and for hanging in there tonight, and we will stand adjourned.
Is this history?